Support for this podcast and the following message come from the United States Postal Service. Turn shipping to your advantage with USPS Ground Advantage service. Learn how to gain a competitive edge at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
From NPR and WNYC, coming to you from beautiful Brooklyn, New York, it's NPR's hour of puzzles, word games, and trivia. Ask Me Another. I'm Jonathan Colton. Now here's your host, Ophira Eisenberg.
Thanks, Jonathan. So I've got a story for you today.
And all right.
It's a real hit in my house with the five-year-old boy demographic.
Okay, good. Good. My favorite kind of story.
So my son is always asking for me to tell him a story, a silly story from my childhood. So I told him one about a month ago, and now I'm in a loop. He wants to hear this story every day. Can't remember where we were, maybe like a Chuck E. Cheese at a birthday or something like that, where they had whack-a-mole.
Whack-a-mole.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's literally a machine where the little painted moles are coming out of the holes, and and then you're whacking it with this mallet. So he remembered that game, and he was like, oh, I want to go play whack-a-mole. And so I remembered the story that when I was like a teenager, we would go to the Calgary Stampede, which had all those games, the, you know, the carnival games, throw the ring on the bottle and the ball and the water pistols, and there was whack-a-mole. And I was with my friends, and I think maybe the first time without our parents at this event. And we were playing whack-a-mole, and we weren't very good at it. And the moles were coming out really, really, really fast. And we had our eyes set on some stuffy that we wanted. I don't know why. You want a prize. And so we figured out, we were like, oh, let's just sit on the machine.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, let's permanently whack all holes. And so when the moles pop up, they will whack themselves. I mean, it's a brilliant strategy.
So we sat on the machines, and Lucas loves when I said, so the moles just, they were whacking our butts. He loves that part. We have to take a pause for like a good solid 2 minutes of laughter
You changed the game to whack-a-butt.
Whack-a-butt. And then, of course, we were caught and we were kicked out of the Stampede.
That's the funniest part, is that you were kicked out for cheating at whack-a-mole.
Yeah.
That's so great. I mean, he's zeroed in on the two great great joys of childhood, jokes about butts and mild transgressions. It's the
best. And it takes place at a carnival. Why am I not writing children's books, is what I'm saying,
this
Jonathan.
This would be a great children's book. Ophira and the Whack-a-Butt.
Whack-a-Butt. We have a great show today. Saturday Night Live cast member Alex Moffat and comedy writer Jen Spira will play a game about baby animals and vampires. But unfortunately, no baby vampires. Comedians Demi Adejuyibe and Gabe Gundacker show up how much they know about sci-fi movies that were set in the future but are now set in the past. And our special guest played Carlton on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. He hosts America's Funniest Home Videos, and he won Dancing with the Stars, Alfonso Ribeiro. So let's go. Our first two contestants are good friends. Alex Moffat's been on Saturday Night Live since 2016. Jen Spira is a comedy writer whose new book is called Big Time, and it's out now. Jen, Alex, hello.
Hello. Ophira, Jonathan, great to be here.
Guess.
Jen, congratulations on your new
book.
Thank you so much. Big Time.
Whee! That is right.
Big Time.
Indeed.
Get your copies.
Yeah, it's a collection of hilarious essays, absurdist concepts that are put together from, I like that, you know, Sherlock Holmes meeting Watson through the technology of now, a dating. I don't want to give it all away, but so many fun.
Oh, thank you so much. It was so fun to get to. I mean, I used to work for Colbert, and then before that, The Onion. And so this is the first time I've been, you know, unleashed, no rules. So that, getting to fully do what I want, that's kind of fun.
You were a writer for Stephen Colbert.
Indeed.
you left, what, last September? Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, last September. Yeah.
But you're still, your voice is still announces the show.
This is true. And it's so funny because no one knows. It's such a weird little fun fact. But yeah, I mean, I think it's the only female late night announcer. It's this sweet gig. But when I did announce I was leaving to work on the book, I know that there were wolves at the door. And there are wolves at the door every day. And so that's why I can never get sick. I really do try to take care, because this gig is, I cannot let it go.
Wolves,
I mean,
at the door. Alex, as someone who's had the opportunity to portray both Eric Trump and Joe mm-hmm. Biden.
Oh. I mean, I've only done Biden once, so whereas we did Eric Trump and Don Jr., I think all told 4,000 times on television. I mean, I had a blast every time we got to do those, because it was basically just like Mikey and I love each other in real life and have kind of a brotherly thing. And there's a sort of like sweetness that we gave to the brothers. I don't know if that's truly there, but we figured it would help. And I just basically could act like a toddler. And then Mikey was sort of like a sweet American psycho. So that was always a good time.
And wait, Allie, when you did Joe the first time and you somersaulted out, which I thought was like such a funny way to intro him, Alex used to work for the Bulls? Okay, I mean, this is your crazy thing. I'm wondering, did you let the SNL people know? I mean, they must know about your physical prowess and what you can do.
I think anywhere I go, I wear the term physical prowess on my sleeve. So I didn't have to tell anybody. But yeah, they know that I like to tumble and twirl and all that.
But just to, you know, for our listeners, you were on the Chicago Bulls acrobatic dunk team.
I was. Benny and the Elevators, Ophira. One of the best acro dunking halftime teams in the game currently. I got to do plenty of jumping and dunking and stuff, but some of these other guys were doing like triple flips and putting it through their legs. So to answer your question, yes, Jenny, I pitched the tumbling in.
Mm-hmm.
I
did. That's great.
Because I'm also a big Willy Wonka fan. And so
yes.
I figured, let's just do it all together. Why not? Yeah.
Bring it all together. All right, we have a couple games. We'll chat some more, but let's slip into a game. You guys ready for your first one?
Heck yes.
Yes.
All right, so you're going to take turns answering questions in this first game. This is a game called This, That, or the Other. We're going to give you the name of something. And you are going to tell us which of three categories it belongs to. Jonathan Coulton, what are today's categories?
Today's categories are baby animals, like the name of a baby animal, a calf or a joey, something like that. Brand names for over-the-counter pain reliever ibuprofen, like Advil or Motrin. Or fictional vampires.
Alex, this first one is for you.
I love it.
Is Allivin a baby animal, a brand of ibuprofen, or a vampire?
Allivin and the Chipmunks? I guess he was kind of a vampire. With those long front teeth. Okay. He could really do some damage to a neck. All right. I'm going to say that's a vampire.
Oh, I'm sorry. It would be an adorable vampire. It's a baby salmon.
No, it's not, though. Call those salmonellas.
Salmonettes.
Salmonettes.
Yeah, Allivin is a baby salmon. And fun fact. I know, you just said, could I have a fun fact about salmon? Yes. Uh-huh. Salmon can change color multiple times over the course of their lives. They change color during breeding seasons to attract mates.
I mean, who among us?
For example.
Yeah,
that's when they become blondes.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Heyo.
All right, Jen, here's one for you.
All righty.
Vasilisa. Baby animal, ibuprofen, or vampire? Vasilisa.
Vasilisa. I mean, it sounds a lot like Vagisil, but it's not Vagisil.
Nope. You're on the right track.
Okay. Let's see.
Yep. I like it.
I mean, whatever. I'm actually going to go with a vampire. It's kind of a great name for a fictional vampire.
You are correct. It is a fictional vampire, yeah. It's actually a royal vampire princess and teenage high schooler in the best-selling Vampire Academy books.
Oh, Vasilisa. That's awesome. That's a great... It's so hard to come up with, like, fake awesome names. Hats off.
You do wonder, though, if, you know, the writer had inspiration just by... from things around them, and they were like...
Yeah, or, just that huge tub of Agisil that they... next to the computer.
And my Aunt Lisa.
Yes. One there, one there. Wait a second. All right, Alex. Dorival.
Pass.
Ali.
Dorival? Can you use it in a sentence, please?
Sure. I love Dorival.
Okay, language of origin.
Oh, Lordy.
I don't know offhand.
Do you hear my baby making a billy goat sound in the background, by the way?
So cute.
Very
cute. Yeah.
Thank you. That's it. Dorival, what? I'll go with an ibuprofen.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
It is. All right. It is marketed in Central America and countries for menstrual relief.
Great.
All right, the last one is for you, Jen.
All righty.
Avicus.
I got it really strong. I had an immediate reaction. I was like, I think this is a vampire, but let me just hold on, Avicus. Yeah.
Is there a fourth category for DJ?
There ought to be.
But that's just every word.
Yeah. Avicus. I mean, kind of sounds like a Roman senator or something, but okay, I'm not, okay, baby animal.
It is a vampire. You were on the right track with the Roman thing. It's an ancient vampire who appears in Anne Rice's Vampire Chronicles.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yes, I think a half point. For that.
Yeah, a half point for...
Don't give it to me. No, no, I don't want that.
We're killing it, Jen.
I have one full point. Yeah. Oh.
More with Alex and Jen after the break, and a little later, I'll talk to Alfonso Ribeiro, who hosts America's Funniest Home Videos, and I promise, no one will get hit in the groin with a baseball. I'm Ophira Eisenberg, and this is Ask Me Another from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. What's the right amount of socializing for you? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need more alone time. Therapy can help you figure out your boundaries, how to recharge, and your social sweet spot, so you can build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Try therapy with BetterHelp. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Visit BetterHelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month. Support for NPR and the following message come from Betterment, an automated investing and savings app. CEO Sarah Levy shares why accessibility is central to Betterment's mission.
The real innovation for Betterment was taking a set of tools that were used by the ultra wealthy and making them accessible to the average investor. And that includes tech strategies, that includes dollar cost averaging. These are all sort of tricks of the trade.
Learn more about automated investing technology at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is NPR's Ask Me Another. I'm Jonathan Colton. Here's your host, Ophira Eisenberg.
Thanks, Jonathan. We're playing games with Saturday Night Live cast member Alex Moffat and the author of the new comedy book, Big Time, Jen Spira. Are you ready for another one?
Yeah.
Sure.
So guess what? You're going to work together in this one. I know. Jen is happy. Alex. You call him Allie. Did I hear you call him
You know,
him Allie?
I do. I call him Alex, too. And okay. I call him Allie, which is not that exciting of a nickname. So I don't...
But it works.
Yeah.
It's very sweet. It's very sweet.
And I call her Teensy Weensy Jenny.
Oh.
And her hubby, Tammy. Tammy Salami with the hocks of hammy.
That's true. My husband's name is Tommy, and he has large thighs. As Alex, can I reveal? As do you, sir. Is that wrong?
You may reveal, yes. With our costumer at SNL once was passing by as I was doing a fitting, and I said the pants they were fitting me for weren't really, they were too snug around the seat and thighs. And I said, yeah, sorry about the ham hocks. And he, without skipping a beat, walked by and goes, more like porchetta.
Wow.
All right, so this next game, Jonathan Colton is going to sing you the clues, and the game is called No Relation.
Yes, we rewrote well-known songs to make them about famous or historical people who have the same last name as the song's artist. So I might sing a song by Whitney Houston with the lyrics changed to be about Angelica Houston. And to win the point, you just need to tell me one of the following three things: the song's artist, the person I'm singing about, or just the title of the song is fine as well. All right?
Sweet.
Here we go.
One of the founding fathers loved to sign his name. He flew a kite in a storm and changed the game. They put his face. They put his face. They put his face on the front of the 100.
Wow.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Very well done. Ellie.
Yeah. Yeah. Do we know it?
Okay.
All right, look.
What do you got?
Wait, I am kind of confused because, I mean, we're singing about Benjamin Franklin.
That is correct. Benjamin Franklin, yeah.
Yep.
Benjamin Franklin, but you make me feel like an... Oh, duh.
Yep.
Of course. Alex, you want to finish this one?
Sure. You want to say it in unison?
Let's say it in unison.
By the wonderful Aretha Franklin.
That is correct.
And that song, the title of that song is... You make me feel like a natural founding father.
Yeah, that is correct. All right, here's another one.
1800s, he was on a search. He went west so he could found his church. Angels came and told him, here's your fate. They said, concentrate, please to translate. This golden play, this guy, he wrote the Book of Mormon. I mean the book, not the Broadway show.
So I think that we know the answer is Josh Gad. Right?
Right?
Yeah, I mean, listen.
By the vampire Vlad Gad.
Oh, Joseph Smith.
Joseph Smith.
Wait, yes.
And then who's the...
Well, so...
Oh, Patti Smith.
Yeah, that's right. So it was...
Wait a minute.
Actually, if you search for this song, usually the 10,000 Maniacs version comes up first, because I think that was the more famous version, but it was originally by Patti Smith. That's right. All right, here's another one.
If you grew up in Ohio, you know this guy, this 90s show. When people hear where you come from, it's so annoying because they always will quote the sitcom. Cleveland rocks, they'll say. You fake laugh till they go away. It's such a burden that you bear, but it's fine, because you always were a much bigger fan of Who's Line.
Jen, do you want to take these?
Well.
Take us home.
Okay. Drew Carey.
That's right.
Yes.
Song is?
Always Be My Baby.
Uh-huh.
By Mariah Carey.
Mariah Carey.
That's right.
Yeah.
They are fraternal twins. Little known fact, Drew Carey and Mariah.
All right. Here's your next one.
He's number 42. Barriers that he broke through. Rookie of the year, so he's going places. A champion for civil rights under those Brooklyn lights. I love him when he's stealing those bases.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the song about the great Jackie Robinson.
That is correct. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But hold on. Because it's the song's cruising together, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And I... Oh, so I see. I know that as, and correct me, please, as Gwyneth's. I mean, Gwyneth recorded that as a Didn't she do that with like she sang it with someone else?
That could be. I don't know that version.
I thought it was her song. I assumed she I thought it was like written for her, so.
So is the song about Bruce Paltrow then? I can only think of one Robinson who writes a lot of songs, uh-huh. and it's is it Smokey
it
Robinson?
It is Smokey yeah. Robinson, that's right.
All right.
Yeah. Well nice. Done.
Yeah. You guys did great working together.
Hey.
You got all the information. It was just beautiful. Alex Moffat is a cast member on Saturday Night Live, which airs on NBC Live on Saturday nights. Jen Spira's new book of comedy short stories is called Big Time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
Thank you for having me.
Our next two contestants are ready to go. Demi Adejuyibe is a writer and comedian whose work can be seen on The Amber Ruffin Show, The Late Late Show with James Corden, and The Good Place. Gabriel Gundacker is a comedian and musician who most recently wrote and composed music for Showtime's Our Cartoon President. Demi, Gabe, welcome to Ask Me Another.
Hello.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for being here. I know that you met through Vine, and now defunct fun video social platform.
Rest in peace.
When we say met through Vine, does that mean you didn't know each other at all and literally liked each other's stuff?
Yeah. I saw a lot of Demi's Vines and I went, and then so when I visited LA, we reached out and we met.
Yeah. I think we went to a podcast taping together and then I think like, several months later, he was looking for a place in LA, and another mutual friend of ours who we also knew through Vine was like, "Oh, Gabe is moving here. He can take my spot." And we've lived together since.
How's it going?
It's going well.
Great. It's going
really
great.
Well. There's no qualms.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So. Last night we settled in, we watched The Terminal together.
That ruled.
Uplifting.
Yeah.
Very.
Good choice.
Yeah.
We have a couple games for you two. Would you like to play some games?
Love to.
Yes.
Okay, so you are going to be competing in this first one, and by that I mean you'll take turns answering the questions. So this is an audio quiz called Future Past. We are going to play you clips of movies that were set in the future when they came out. But now reality is caught up with those movies, and they are now technically set in the past. And all you have to do is identify the movie.
Ooh.
All right, Demi. Here's President Danny Glover in a 2009 disaster movie set a few years after its release.
6 months ago, I was made aware of a situation so devastating that at first, I refused to believe it. However, through the concerted efforts of our brightest scientists, we have confirmed its validity. The world as we know it will soon come to an end.
As soon as you didn't say what year was set, I was like, I think I know it. Is this 2012?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
If the world's going to end, he's got to speed
yeah.
it up.
Yeah, totally.
He started ad-libbing, and drum roll, please, the world, the one we live in, is coming.
The one we live in.
To an end.
This world.
Not the other so world. Funny. I'll list the other worlds later.
All right, Gabriel, this film was released in 1991 and set in 1995.
Of all the would-be fathers who came and went over the years, this thing, this machine, was the only one who measured up. In an insane world, it was the sanest choice.
That would be The Terminal 2. Or Terminator 2. Terminator 2.
I wish there was a Terminal 2.
Where he gets stuck in the airport again and it's just as sad.
It's even worse this time. That is correct, Gabriel.
Yes.
I can't wait. I'm going to rewatch this movie on Sunday. I'm really excited.
We just rewatched that movie.
I mean, the only thing I remember about it, of course, was being obsessed with Linda Hamilton's arms.
Sure.
And actually thinking about it, that is now my past, because I remember watching it and thinking, I'm going to work out, and in the future, I'm going to have those arms, which never happened, so that is now the past. All right, Demi, this John Carpenter classic was released in 1981.
In 1988, the crime rate in the United States rises 400%. The once great city of New York becomes the one maximum security prison for the entire country.
That would be a Escape from New York.
Yes, exactly. It takes place in the radical future of 1997.
So far, I think we've watched all these movies together in like the past like
5 years. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, Gabe, this 1982 sci-fi classic takes place in 2019.
I'm Rachel.
Deckard.
It seems you feel our work is not a benefit to the public.
Replicants are like any other machine. They're either a benefit or a hazard. They're a benefit, it's not my problem.
What is Blade Runner?
That is correct. You don't need to Jeopardy it, though.
Okay, sorry.
No. But you got the answer right. That's the important thing.
That's a good one. That's a movie I pretended to understand when I was a child.
Oh, yeah.
If there's one thing kids really love, it's noir. We should be forgiven for not really getting it as kids, I think.
Kids can't get enough of the Maltese Falcon.
Yeah, that's right. They love it.
Demi, Gabe, would you like to play another game?
Absolutely.
Just one more, please.
Okay,
just one. We'll stop
deal,
at one.
Deal. So I don't know what you guys did at the beginning of the pandemic. It's such a weird thing to say, but I'll say it. At the beginning of the pandemic, if you were lucky enough to have extra time on your hands and not have a lot of other problems, maybe you were baking bread. Did you?
Oh, yes. And really? Still am.
It's a lot. I just did the whole 30 diet, and there was a month there where I couldn't eat it, but now it's back. So now I'll be eating it again.
Gabe did come upstairs yesterday and saw an entire chocolate birthday cake on our counter and was just sort of like, what is this? Why did you do this? And I didn't have a good answer for him.
It was nobody's birthday.
It was nobody's birthday.
No one's birthday.
Well, not nobody, just nobody you know. Okay.
No, it's That's the one true. Day that no one was born ever.
That was it. No one liked that for sex 9 months ago. at the beginning, especially for most people, everyone was baking bread. It became like the hot hobby. Some of us has continued, but that inspired us to write this multiple choice quiz about bread facts. You're also going to be competing in this game. Gabe, this first one is for you.
Okay.
Bread facts. Until the 1770s, bread was also used for what unconventional purpose? Was it A, it was smushed up and used to erase pencil marks? B, a loaf was placed on the front door of country houses to signify a safe haven for American soldiers in the Revolutionary War? Or C, doctors would use the butt ends of bread to apply pressure to a wound?
Now, I don't know about bread as much as I know about science fiction films. Oh, I'm going to go B. War bread.
War bread? Sorry, that is incorrect.
No!
Get this. People used to use them as erasers.
See, this is how stupid I am. I was like, they didn't have pencils in the 70s.
And if you're really accurate, you get a snack at the end of your project.
Demi, in 19th century New Orleans, Mardi Gras king cake, which is technically a bread made with yeasted dough, had a bean baked into the center, until Mackenzie's, one of the most popular bakeries, started using tiny baby figurines to represent the baby Jesus. Why did the baker, Donald Entringer, make this change? A, the baker's daughter collected dollhouses, and when the baker ran out of beans, he used dolls in a pinch. B, a traveling salesman with a surplus of baby figurines, you know the type, suggested the baker buy them all and use them. Or C, the baker was a devout Christian and thought the bean wasn't religious enough.
I'm going to say C, devout Christianity.
That's a fine guess. The answer is surprisingly B, a traveling salesman had a lot of baby figurines and suggest to the baker that he buy them and use them.
That's a
just
good salesman.
Unloading. Yeah, I know, right?
Beans, huh? Still using beans? Crazy. You should be using babies.
Everyone's using babies now.
Everyone's using babies.
I have a trunk full of them.
Gabe, during World War I, the UK's food ministry introduced the Bread Order of 1917, banning the sale of freshly baked bread. Why? Was it A, it was thought that freshly baked goods were more likely to carry foodborne illnesses? Was it B, the food controller argued that slightly stale bread is less appetizing, and therefore it would encourage people to ration it? Or was it C, so that the employees of the food ministry could eat all the fresh bread before anybody else could?
I don't believe that food controllers are real. So I'm going to go A, bread-borne illnesses.
Yeah, it does sound like the real one, doesn't it?
Yes.
But food controllers are real.
Oh.
They did it because they wanted the bread to be less appetizing so people would effectively buy less.
Wow. Let's not go back to that time.
Oh, Vince.
All right. This is the last clue, Demi. It's for you. Why were some miners during the California Gold Rush nicknamed sourdoughs? A, they were the ones with the sourest moods. B, they were the newest miners to California. Or C, they would sleep huddled around jars of starter they brought with them to keep them warm and therefore active.
I'm going to go with C, that they were sleeping around jars of starter.
Yeah, you were correct. Everybody kept their starter with them. Once you know this, surely, once you get a starter going, you don't ever abandon it.
Well, no, you can't.
That name came out about because some local travelers saw these miners doing that, and they said, sourdough's miners keeping so warm.
Oh, my gosh.
That's pretty good.
That's really good. Thank you, Debbie, Gabe. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having
Absolutely.
Us.
After the break, I'll talk to Alfonso Ribeiro, a.k.a. Carlton from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and he also drives race cars. That's right. We think that's amazing because race car is a palindrome. I'm Ophira Eisberg, and this is Ask Me Another from NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Betterment, an automated investing and savings app. CEO Sarah Levy shares why accessibility is central to Betterment's mission.
The real innovation for Betterment was taking a set of tools that were used by the ultra wealthy and making them accessible to the average investor. And that includes tech strategies, that includes dollar cost averaging. These are all sort of tricks of the trade.
Learn more about automated investing technology at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Bluehost. Try Bluehost Cloud, the hosting plan made for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, fast load times, and 24/7 support, your sites can handle high traffic spikes. Visit Bluehost.com.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell and show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/NPR.
This is NPR's Ask Me Another. I'm Jonathan Colton. Here's your host, Ophira Eisenberg.
Thanks, Jonathan. It's time to welcome our special guest. You may know him as Carlton from the 90s television series, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and he currently hosts America's Funniest Home Videos, Alfonso Ribeiro. Hello, welcome.
Hello, hello, hello.
Excellent. So, you know, your family, you come from a family of entertainers. Your grandfather was a singer. Your aunt was in Laugh-In,
yes.
Which, amazing, the variety show Laugh-In. Was it just assumed that you would also go into showbiz, or did you show some sort of talent at an early age that they were like, yep, no, this is happening?
I would say I showed the talent at an early age. My parents definitely, you know, didn't play favorites and only put me in. They, you know, my brothers We all tried to get an agent. I was just the only one who got one. Okay. So they didn't,
I guess
they
that never comes up. That never comes up, does it?
It never comes up around the dinner table when people have had two or three drinks. Yeah, so, but you know, my parents weren't playing favorites. But yeah, it was one of those things where my dad mostly was like, oh no, this kid has something and we need to explore it. And then, you know, like every parent that ever looks at putting their kid in show business, they don't go all the way to, let's get him an agent. They were like, well, let's do some local plays and see what happens and let's put him in the Glee Club. And what always seemed to happen was I would go in there and get the lead roles. And, you know, the funny part was when you really think about it, like I grew up in Riverdale, right? So Riverdale is, you know, somewhat integrated, but it was when I was a kid, it was mostly a white neighborhood. And so for me to get the starring role alongside a white girl playing Hansel and Gretel in the 70s was not a simple decision.
Right.
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 So it was something where the creative director was like, no, those two are the best. And those are the two that's getting it. And so, I appreciate the fact that person made those kinds of choices then, because it really did set the path for me to try and do this professionally. But yeah, it was something that my parents just felt, and we went in and tried, and it worked.
So yeah, just undeniable.
That's right.
Yeah, and then it was just pretty big for you. I mean, you got cast in junior high in a Broadway show.
Yes.
A Broadway show called The Tap Dance Kid. Playing one of the leads, and then after a glowing review, you get cast in a commercial, which isn't just any commercials. You get cast in that iconic, it was a 90-second Pepsi commercial with the Jacksons.
Yes.
Like that was no small, tiny commercial.
We're just going to, I got a commercial the other day. It was amazing. Like, it was cool. I got a commercial. I'm going to be, who are your co-stars? Yes, Michael Jackson, the rest of the Jacksons. Just going to hang out. Just going to hang out in the street and just dance a little while. It'll be fun. It's going to be great. And so they made the offer, and we were like, absolutely. And then the show, Tap Dance Kids, said, no, you cannot go to California to shoot this commercial. And my dad was like, y'all funny. Y'all, I like the humor that you guys, you're pretending like you actually can stop us. This is funny. So, but they like threatened to sue us. They had lawyers at the airport when we got there to board the plane. And my dad was like, nope, we're going. And we went to California. We shot the commercial. We come back. This commercial aired, and within 48 hours of the first airing of the commercial, we were sold out for 2 months.
Wow.
So then they were like, oh,
they were
sorry.
Like, they were like, oh, this, huh.
So, my bad. And thank you, I guess.
Oh, wow. So, and of course, everyone knows you from the 90s television series, Will Smith's sitcom, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, where you play his preppy cousin, Carlton. And this character of yours also had an iconic dance. Mm-hmm. And I would say it's, swinging the arms, snapping the fingers. It's sort of a joyous celebration of being uncool. I would say is the first depiction on television of dancing like nobody's watching.
I've never heard it, looked at it that way. You're right. Yeah, definitely. You know, that's not a move you're supposed to be doing in public. But when you do it, everybody is joyous around you.
What's happy?
Yes, you've made everybody happy with it.
And I know that obviously you came up with it, but were there different iterations of it decided?
Not necessarily. No, it was pretty close to what it was. I mean, I added things as years went on and added little pieces to it. But ultimately, the main dance was the dance right from the beginning. I had basically had seen that dance and played around with that dance a little bit before Fresh Prince even started. And so when it said Carlton dances in the script, I was kind of like, huh, What would it? What would this character do? Like, what would be the move in the first time in rehearsal? It was like, all right, Carlton dances. What do you think you're gonna do here? I was like, I got it. Let's just do the scene. And so we started the scene, and then I broke out a dance, and everybody is on the floor crying, laughing. And I was like, I think we got it. I think this is the move we'll do. And so from there, it maintained what we were doing, and they kept putting it back in the script. It was like, you know, every other week. I was like, can Carlton stop dancing?
But when you said earlier that you had played around with the dance before you auditioned, what do you mean?
The first time I ever saw the dance, I was at a in a lobby bar, right? But it wasn't at the bar, but I was happened to be in the lobby, yeah. and food and they had music, right? And there were these two white guys, clearly, who was doing that move, right? And I was like, that is hysterical. What are those dudes doing? And, you know, they were on the dance floor just living, just in their 80s, just going. And I was like, this is hysterical. And then I was like making fun of them, right? Mm-hmm. By like, hey, look at this. Right? And so I felt the embodiment of the motion. And I've always said that the inspiration for the dance was Eddie Murphy's White Man Dance and Courtney Cox in the Bruce Springsteen video where she gets up on stage, right? That is the origin of the move, right? And I was like, this is perfect.
And you've been hosting America's Funniest Home Videos since 2015. The show first debuted in 1989. And so for our younger listeners, just so you know, that's kind of like the original TikTok.
Well, actually, for the younger viewers, I like to say it's the original YouTube.
It's original. Mm. Yeah, right. And at this point, you've witnessed, I don't know, hundreds of these videos.
There have been, you know, thousands at this point.
Thousands.
It's a lot of videos.
Okay, so what's your favorite genre of the videos?
I've always said that my favorite is what we like to call the epic fails, where people try and do something that they absolutely should not ever think to do that, and it just goes horribly wrong, and we go, duh.
What do you think? What's the formula in terms of an epic fail?
Well, like, you know, epic fails can come in many different ways, right? Many different forms. It could be like the guy who is at a lake house and they have
I know where you're going.
They have a metal roof, right? Yes. And they're like, I'm going to jump off my metal roof into the lake. And they're like, okay, but you've already been in the lake, right? So you're wet. And then you go up with a metal roof and you decide that you're going to run off the roof into the lake. Well, your footing is not going to be solid. So, you know, the best ones are when they start slipping early so that they have to make a decision as to whether they're going to try to hold on to the roof or they're just going to just continue having a physical mess all the way into the lake. Those are great ones, right?
Do you have friends, family, acquaintances trying to personally send you their clips?
I get people all the time who are like, dude, I got a video.
Of course.
And you know, oh, this is the funniest video ever. And then you watch the video, you're like, not really. And they're like, you don't think that's funny? I was like, no. They're like, dude, Aunt Josie, right? She is like...
I guess you have to know Aunt Josie. If you knew Aunt Josie, you'd find it hilarious.
And that's exactly where I'm going, right? Like you've got one rule to know whether something is funny. If I need to know the person in the video to know why it's funny, it ain't funny.
That's right. If Aunt Josie is wet and standing on a metal roof of a lake house,
let's see it.
Yes. Yeah.
Are you ready for an Ask Me Another challenge?
Sure, let's do it. Let's go.
Okay. We know you're a huge golf fan, so we decided to create a game that is kind of like the trivia equivalent of golf.
Okay, okay.
Where the object is to get the lowest score possible.
Mm, got it. Okay. Like golf. Got it. Yes.
So I'll give you a category like the 10 best poker hands. And your goal is to give me an answer that is the closest to the number one on the list.
Gotcha.
Okay. And if you give me the number one answer, which in this case would be a royal flush,
hey,
that's worth
Why did you give me the answer?
Just an example.
I thought that was the question.
I was ready to go. I knew the answer.
I think I should still get a 1 point for that.
Okay, sure. Absolutely.
Because I was going to say royal flush.
I saw it in your eyes.
Yeah.
And because, you know, we should make this a competition. It's more fun.
Uh-oh.
So you'll be playing against Jonathan Coulton.
Okay.
Let me congratulate you in advance because I don't know any of these topics. I don't know anything. These are all topics that have been customized for you. So I'm in trouble.
But you already have a jump start because you know the topics.
I suppose that's true. If I were a monster, I would have done a little research before the show, but I didn't. You know why? Because I'm lazy. So here I am.
And by the way, we don't know whether you did or didn't. Okay.
That's true.
All right, well, let's try a few.
Okay, all right.
Okay, here's the first one for you. You host a game show, Catch 21, which is based on blackjack. So according to a survey published by the American Gaming Association, what is the most popular game with casino visitors? There are 8 on the list.
You know, that's a tough one because I think realistically, it's one of 3. Do slots count?
I'm going to say yes.
Then I have to say slots.
Okay. Jonathan, what would you like to say?
I was going to say slots because I think that's the right answer. Because you don't have to learn how to do anything. You just put your money in and push the button.
Yes.
I mean, how much do you have to know to throw a number and watch a ball roll?
Right. You know,
yeah, I guess that's true. I'm going to see if I can get the number 2, though. I'm pretty sure slots is going to be the number 1. But I'm going to say... It's going to be something. I mean, it might very well be blackjack. I'm going to say blackjack. No, I'm going to change it. Roulette. I'm going to say roulette.
Oh, okay. Well, Alfonso, you are correct. 48% of casino visitors head to the slots. Blackjack is number 2. It's 16%. So 48%, 50 basically, 50%
right.
You could say go to slots. And then the other 50% is divided blackjack and then poker and then roulette and then video poker. Craps.
Oh, okay.
Sportsbook. And lastly, Baccarat.
Yeah.
Right.
Alfonso, you also are a huge, you're into golf, and you're also, I assume, a golf fan.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes.
So which professional golfer has won the most men's majors tournaments, which are the Masters, the PGA Championship, the U.S. Open, and the Open Championship?
Well, that is clearly Jack Nicklaus. He is the major champion. He's got the most of anybody.
Okay. Jonathan Coulton, would you like to weigh in with an answer?
Jack Nicklaus is one of 3 golfers that I can name. So you've
gotcha.
already knocked out one of the pillars of my plan.
Knowledge base.
I know Arnold Palmer is a golfer, but I only know that because I like the iced tea lemonade mixture. I have no idea how good he was.
And it's really good. It's really good.
It's
the Arnold Palmer drink is fantastic.
Delicious. Yes. But I'm going to go with Tiger Woods.
Okay, very good.
No,
you know this one so well. Jack Nicklaus is number 1 with 18 wins.
Yes.
Tiger Woods is number 2
with 15.
That is...
Exactly.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes. I'm so far outclassed in this game.
One last question before we wrap up.
Okay.
Alfonso, you won Dancing with the Stars. Congratulations. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
According to a 2019 survey by an online tuxedo rental company, what is the most popular wedding first dance song? The most popular first dance song at a wedding, and just let you know, people from all generations were surveyed for this, and I'll take anything in the top 10.
No idea.
Bizarre.
That's a tough one. First dance. I'm gonna say it only because like I've got nothing else. It's not unusual.
Okay, I love it.
That would be an amazing
first dance song.
I don't think it's on the list, but,
Okay. All right.
I'm going to say, it's hard to think of any. All I keep thinking of just prom songs. And I feel like that's a very different vibe.
Right.
Maybe something classic. Maybe something like, how about At Last by, who is that? At Last. Who sings that?
Right.
My love.
Yeah, there you go. Wow.
Yep. I mean, I'll give a point for that.
Yeah,
okay.
For sure.
So I am sorry, Alfonso. Your suggestion was not on the top 10 list.
Yes.
Not on.
But that just means that the top 10 list is wrong.
That's right. It's just at a date as of this moment.
It will be eventually.
Jonathan, At Last by Etta James ended up in the five spot on the list.
Nice.
Number one is Unchained Melody by the Righteous Brothers.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
All right.
Number two is All of Me, John Legend.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And number 10 is Marry Me by Train. And I would just like to say, as a First Dance Wedding song, it's a little late in the game. Don't find out in your first date.
Yes.
In your first dance, sorry. Alfonso Ribeiro hosts America's Funniest Home Videos. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. This was great.
And that's our show. Ask Me Another's house musician is Jonathan Colton.
Hey, my name anagrams to Thou Jolt a Cannon.
Our puzzles were written by our staff, along with Julia Melfi, Kara Weinberger, and senior writer Camilla Franklin, with additional material by Emily Winter. Ask Me Another is produced by Travis Larchuk, Nancy Seychow, James Sparber, Ramel Wood, and our intern, Sophie Hernandez-Sibionithis. Our senior supervising producer is Rachel Neal, and our boss's bosses are Steve Nelson and Anya Grundman. Thanks to our production partner, WNYC. I'm her ripe begonias.
Ophira Eisenberg.
And this was Ask Me Another from NPR. Hey, you're still listening. Fantastic. So since you're still here, why not pop over to Apple Podcasts and write us a review? We'd love to hear from you, and it also helps others find out about our show. For information about new episodes, bonus videos, and more, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Thanks! Next time on Ask Me Another, actor Nassim Pedrad talks about transforming into a 14-year-old boy for her new show, Chad. And Reggie Watts and Kate Berlant decipher real or fake wellness products. Plus, Sashir Zameda and Caitlin McGee compete in a game where we play apologies from TV shows and movies. So join me on NPR's Ask Me Another, the answer to life's funnier questions.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure. AI may be the most important new computer technology ever, but AI needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited 2x miles on every purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey. I hear you have a birthday coming up. Yeah, you. If you're listening to this, that means you have a birthday coming up eventually. And here at Life Kit, we want it to be a special one.
Magic can happen and good luck can happen and serendipity can happen if we're open to it.
How to have a good birthday, even if you're not a birthday person. That's on the Life Kit podcast from NPR.